Graphic Audio, a movie in your mind.
Graphic Audio presents William W. Johnstone's Eagle 17, Carnage of Eagles, by William W. Johnstone and A.J. Johnstone. Narrated by Mort Shelby. With performances by David Coyne, Mort Shelby, Richard Rowan, Christopher Graybill, Bradley Smith, Michael Glenn, Terrence Aselford, Dylan Lynch, Christopher Sheeran, Nick DePinto, Eric Mesner, Ken Jackson, Michael John Casey, Thomas Keegan, David Harris, Elizabeth Jernigan, Evan Casey, Drew Copas, Danny Gavigan, Alexander Strain, Joe Brack, Tim Carlin, Johan Detweiler, James Lewis, Scott McCormick, Gregory Gordon, James Konachek, Tim Getman, Ren Casey, Yasmin Twazan, Dan Sontag, and Lily Beacon. Two blocks from the gallows, around which a crowd was already beginning to gather, Deputy Sharp walked back to the cell where the condemned prisoner was spending his last day.
Here's your last meal. Steak, fried taters, mess of greens, and biscuits. If it was up to me, I wouldn't feed you nothing but bread and water. But the sheriff wanted to be nice to you.
That's very good of the sheriff. Did you bring ketchup?
Of course I brought ketchup. You can't very well have fried taters without ketchup. Here.
The prisoner took the food.
And I've noticed that the prisoners that's about to get hung pert now always don't eat their meal, so I wind up eating it for them. And I like ketchup with taters.
Falcon returned to his bunk and sat down. Sharp turned his back on the cell and walked to the front window of the room.
I tell you the truth, I do believe there's more folks that is coming to town to watch your hanging than any hanging we've ever had before. Yes, sir, this is going to be quite a show. What's the matter? You choking on something?
Sharp turned and saw the prisoner lying back on his bunk. His throat was covered with blood, and his arm was draped down off the bunk onto the floor. The knife, its blade smeared with blood, had fallen from his open hand.
Son of a bitch! What the hell did you do that for? You done spoiled everyone's fun!
Sharp leaned down to get a closer look at the blood-smeared throat. Emmett Kyle, a traveling salesman from Fort Worth, had just sold an order of sewing notions to Eb Smalley, owner of Smalley's Mercantile in Sorrento, Texas.
You've made some good choices, Eb. Your customers are really going to love that.
I know I bought more than I need. You're just too good of a salesman.
Well, I have to be. I have a wife and two kids to feed.
Speaking of feeding, how about dropping by the house tonight for supper? You know how Millie loves company. You can fill her in on all the gossip.
I do pick up a lot of gossip traveling from town to town. And it comes in handy. Mrs. Smalley isn't the only one willing to trade a good supper for a little news.
I'll see you at 6 tonight.
Across the street from Smalley's Mercantile, Albert Russell, Harry Toombs, Josh Peters, and Lou Hamilton were in the Long Trail Saloon. The four men were sheriff's deputies, and they'd been drinking since early afternoon. The other customers in the saloon tended to stay away from them as much as possible, waiting until one or more of them would pass out drunk.
I'll tell you the truth. The day we put on these badges is the day we found the pot of gold at the end of the rainbow.
Well, now, I wouldn't exactly say that, Russell.
Yeah? I know what you was doing before you pinned that deputy star. If I remember right, you was shoveling shit out of the stalls over Kimberly's stable.
Well, but if you stop to think about it, I was the one shoveling the shit. I wasn't the one taking it.
He got you on that one, Al.
Yeah, well, Hamilton, I know this is the best thing ever to happen to me. I've cowboyed for half a dozen ranchers, burned up in the summer, froze to death in the winter. Where else could you get a job where you could spend half the day in a saloon?
Except we ain't supposed to be here like this. What we supposed to be doing is patrolling the streets to make sure there ain't nobody causing any trouble.
Everyone in this town's so scared of Sheriff Poindexter, ain't nobody gonna cause any trouble. And truth to tell, one thing we're supposed to do is collect the taxes.
Oops. Russell stood up, and when he did, the chair fell over.
Oh, shit.
You all right there, Al?
Yeah, I just maybe need me a breath of fresh air is all.
Russell, who was the most inebriated of the four, walked unsteadily over to the Batwing doors.
Hey, you fellas, come over here.
What is it?
Come here and look at this.
Oh, whoa.
Look at what?
Look at this funny-looking hat on that feller. What kind of hat would you call that?
That's called a bowler.
A bowler?
It's what fancy dudes wear in the city.
What the hell is he wearing it here for?
More than likely come in on the stage. Probably a salesman or something.
Look there. He's got him a red feather sticking up from the hat band. Ain't he the dandy, though?
He looks pretty dandified, all right.
Maybe he wouldn't look quite so dandified if he didn't have that feather sticking out of the hat.
What are you gonna do?
I'm going to undandify the little sumbitch. I'm going to shoot that feather off on his hat.
You crazy. You can't hit that feather from here.
$5 says I can.
All right, you're on.
Maybe you ought not to try.
Oh, shit, I think I hit the little sumbitch.
Russell watched as Smalley ran from his store out into the street and knelt down beside the salesman.
All right, everybody calm down. It was an accident. I didn't mean to shoot him.
Where were you? Over in the saloon?
Yeah, but like I said, it was an accident.
Oh, that's a good 40 yards from here. How'd you accidentally shoot someone from 40 yards away?
I don't know why.
He had his gun out, showing it to us, and it went off.
Yeah, that's what happened. I was showing him my gun, and it just went off.
What the hell was so interesting about your gun that you had to show it off in a way that wound up killing a man?
Look now, damn you. Don't you go getting all highfalutin' on me. I told you I didn't mean to kill the feller. I was just looking at that little red feather and...
Good Lord, man. You didn't try to shoot that feather from way over there, did you?
Well, I
told you he was showing us his gun and it went off.
Yeah, that's what it was.
Oh, hell, here comes Poindexter.
Sheriff Poindexter was square-jawed and thick-set with black hair and a drooping black mustache. But what set him apart from all other men was his left eye. There was no eyelid for his left eye, and that made it bug out, almost like it was too big for the socket. The blade that had taken off his eyelid had also taken out half of the eyebrow over that eye, leaving in its stead a puffy clump of scar tissue.
What happened here?
It was an accident, Sheriff. I was showing these other fellas my gun, and it went off. I didn't mean to kill this little feller.
Anybody know who he is?
His name's Emmett Kyle. He's a salesman from Fort Worth.
All right, Russell. You killed him. You're responsible for him.
See to it that Nunnally gets his body all cleaned up and sent back to Fort Worth.
All right.
You got any family there?
He's got a wife and two kids.
Oh, that's good. That means we won't have to be out any money for his burying.
Is that all you're going to do?
Well, what do you mean, is that all? What do you expect me to do?
Investigate it. Good Lord, man, there's been a killing here.
There's nothing to investigate, Smalley. It was an accident, pure and simple.
Sheriff Poindexter isn't going to do a damn thing about it. No investigation, nothing.
Smalley spoke to Harold Denham. Denham was not only Smalley's friend, he was also the owner and publisher of the Sorrento Advocate.
Well, come on, Eb. You know Poindexter. Did you really expect him to do anything?
I guess not. But it makes me angry. I just wish there was something we could do about it.
Right now, the only thing I can do is write about it in the paper and hope I can keep the pot stirred up so that maybe someday the people will decide they've had enough of Poindexter.
And don't forget about Judge Dawes. He not only facilitates Sheriff Poindexter, he's in league with him.
Yes, so's Gillespie, the prosecutor. Death in the streets of Sorrento. Yesterday, Emmett Kyle, a salesman from Fort Worth, was shot down in the street. Mr. Kyle was well known by merchants in Sorrento and other towns as an honest man who made good on his promises and kept his end of any bargain made. He had a wife and two children. This fine man was cut down in the prime of life when a bullet struck him in the head. The missile was energized by a pistol that was in the hands of Deputy Albert Russell. Russell has made the totally unbelievable claim that his firearm discharged accidentally when he was showing it to Toombs, Hamilton, and Peters, who are also sheriff's deputies. It is not surprising that the three deputies verified Russell's story. However, there were other witnesses in the saloon who tell a completely different tale. The story, as told by these witnesses, is that Deputy Russell, while in a state of inebriation, attempted to shoot the feather from Mr. Kyle's hat. This was from a distance of 40 yards. It would be a prodigious pistol shot from an expert when he is sober. Deputy Russell missed his mark, his bullet striking Mr. Kyle in the temple. Unfortunately, none of these witnesses will agree to testify against the deputy, and they have given this newspaper their story only on the promise that they remain anonymous. How long, dear readers, I ask you, will our fair community remain under the despotic control of Judge Dawes, Prosecutor Gillespie, Sheriff Poindexter, and his evil deputies? Is it not time that we, as citizens, took some action? It is our misfortune that Texas does not have petition and recall, but we can certainly unite to elect a new judge, sheriff, and prosecuting attorney at the next election.
Johnny Pollard was standing at the end of the bar, the Bull's Head Saloon. Johnny was a cowboy who rode for the Twin Peaks Ranch. Today was his 21st birthday, and he was trying to talk Belle LaForge into giving him a free visit.
Johnny, if I gave you a free visit for your birthday, everyone would be wanting a free visit for their birthday. You can see that, can't you?
How about if you give me a special deal? Like, maybe 50 cents off.
Just then, Amos Drew walked into the bar. The albino wasn't hard to pick out. His hair was white, his skin was without color, and his eyes were pink. It was said that he had killed at least 10 men, though some insisted that the count was as high as 20. He was wearing a long duster. That in itself wasn't unusual because many riders wore dusters on the trail. But Drew wore his duster pulled back and hooked over his pistol, enabling him to get to it quickly if need be.
Whiskey.
Yes, sir, Mr. Drew, whatever you say. Well, nothing is too good for Mr. Amos Drew.
Johnny heard the bartender address Drew.
Did you hear that?
Belle had tensed up the moment Drew came into the saloon.
That there is Amos Drew.
Come on upstairs with me, Johnny. I'll give you your birthday present now.
Just a minute. I'd like to meet him.
Johnny, stay away from him, please.
She put her hand on Johnny's arm in an attempt to get him to go with her, but he paid no attention to it.
Are you Amos Drew?
Drew made only a casual glance toward the cowboy, almost as if he hadn't even seen him.
You're a famous man, Mr. Drew. I have heard a lot about you.
Go away. Leave your woman.
What? What did you say?
It's been a while since I had me a woman. I want that one.
Frightened, the woman put her hand on the young cowboy's shoulder.
Come on, Johnny, please. Your birthday present.
Well, Mr. Drew, I reckon you're gonna have to find someone else. It seems that Belle and I have our plans. Today is my birthday, you see.
Find another woman to celebrate your birthday. I want this one.
I don't care what you want. I'm not going with you.
You're a whore, ain't you? You have to go with anyone who pays you.
I don't have to go with you, you maggot-looking son of a bitch.
Cowboy, you had better teach a woman some manners.
Mr. Drew, you obviously don't know Belle. She ain't the kind of woman you can teach anything to.
Slap her in the face.
What? What do you mean, slap her in the face?
You can understand English, can't you? The woman insulted me. So what I want you to do is slap her in the face and make her apologize to me for what she said. And you might as well tell her to beg me not to kill you.
Look here! This is getting way out of hand. I ain't gonna slap no woman in the face, and I ain't gonna stand here and talk to you no more neither. So I'm just gonna walk away now.
Slap her in the face and make her apologize, cowboy. Or go for your gun.
Mr. Drew, the boy is right. He didn't have nothing to do with it.
Without even looking at the bartender, Drew backhanded him with his left hand.
I'm sorry. There. I've apologized. I'm the one who spoke to you like that. Please don't hurt these men.
It's too late now. The ball's been open. Besides which, you ain't been slapped yet. This is the one I'm talking to. What do you say, cowboy? Are you gonna slap that woman like I told you to?
Johnny, do it. Please do it. Can't you see that he's crazy? He'll kill you if you don't do it.
I can't slap you, Belle.
Please do it. It ain't like I ain't never been slapped before.
Better listen to the woman, Johnny. If you don't want me to kill you, you better slap her.
The hell I will. I'll be damned if I let the likes of you make me slap a woman.
Johnny, please do it. I'll go with him.
Not yet, Missy. Not till I've dealt with your boyfriend.
Better step aside, Belle. Looks like there's gonna be some shooting, and I don't want you to get hurt.
Darling, no! What are you gonna do? You can't go against him! Don't you know who this is?
Yeah, I know who the son of a bitch is.
He'll kill you!
Better to die a man than live a coward. I ain't apologizing to this low-assed, piss-complexioned, pig faced son of a bitch, and I ain't begging him not to kill me. Everybody's got to die sometime. Could be this is his time.
Could be. I tell you what I'll do. Just to make it fair, I'm gonna let you draw first. I'm gonna count to three, cowboy. You can draw any time you want, but when I get to three, you had better draw, because I'm going to. One.
Johnny, Mr. Drew, you don't have to do this.
Two.
Johnny, please, don't do this.
Johnny suddenly made a desperate grab for his gun. The albino was lightning fast.
It's funny. When I woke up this morning, I sure never thought I'd be dying on my birthday.
You. I need a woman.
Do you think I would go upstairs with you now? After this? After you murdered?
I didn't murder him. It was a fair fight.
And if you had gone with me when I first asked you, this wouldn't have happened. What did it gain you? Now your boyfriend is dead, and you're still gonna go upstairs with me.
The hell I am!
Drew had not reholstered his smoking pistol, and he pointed it toward the bartender.
Do you want to be the cause of another man dying?
Bale, go with him. Please.
With tears of grief, fear, and frustration streaming down her face, Bale turned and started toward the stairs that led to the second floor. Falcon McAllister had ridden over to Durango from nearby McAllister Valley to bring a pair of boots to Murchison's Boots and Saddle. Tim Murchison was the best leather worker he had ever met, and it was worth the ride. Tim came out onto the front porch of his shop and smiled.
Falcon, good to see you.
At that moment, someone came running up the boardwalk from the Bull's Head Saloon.
There's been a murder! There's been a murder!
Marty, what is it?
Amos Drew just killed Johnny Pollard. He's gonna say that it was a fair fight, but there wasn't nothing fair about it. He pushed Johnny into a drawing on him, and he said he was gonna kill the bartender if Bell didn't go upstairs with him. I'm going to get the sheriff.
Sheriff Farrell and his deputy are both out of town right now.
Something has got to be done. Drew's a crazy man. I wouldn't doubt, but he'll kill the girl once he's through with her.
I'll go have a look.
Falcon, you don't have to do that. You don't live here. I do. And from time to time, Sheriff Farrell deputizes me. So if anyone goes, it should be me.
Are you a deputy now?
Well, no, but...
Then I'll go.
It's this way.
Falcon tossed his boots to Tim.
I need new heels.
Falcon, you don't need to do this.
Yeah, don't make him too high. Is Drew still here?
As far as I know, he is. He went upstairs with Bell.
When Falcon stepped into the saloon a minute later, he saw the male patrons as well as the bar girl standing in a semicircle, looking down at the body.
Is the man that did this still here?
Who are you?
Percy, this here's Falcon McAllister. I reckon you heard of him.
Yeah, you damn right I heard of him. And if anyone can handle Drew, why, I reckon it would be him. Drew's still here. He's upstairs.
What room?
Bell's room is the first one on the right at the head of the stairs, Mr. McAllister.
When Falcon reached the room, he tried the door, but it was locked.
Go away.
I have clean towels.
We don't need no damn towels.
It's the law, you have to have clean towels.
Drew was holding a gun in his hand.
I told you I don't want any damn towels.
Falcon, who was standing to one side, reached out to grab Drew's hand. He jerked forward toward the banister. Drew spun around to bring his pistol to bear on his attacker, but instead, he lost his balance and went through the banister.
It's all right, folks. The son of a bitch is dead.
Sorrento, Texas. Harold Denham, Dr. Gunter, and Eb Smalley were sharing a table in the Hog Heaven Saloon. Denham was a small man who was hatless and bald except for a ring of thin gray hair. He was wearing glasses, which had the effect of making his eyes look larger than they were. Dr. Gunter was in his early 60s, very slender, with white hair and a well-trimmed white beard.
That was quite an article you wrote, Harold. And knowing Albert Russell, it isn't hard to imagine that he would do something like that.
I just wish the people who talked to me would testify in court.
What good would it do? You know as well as I that Theodore Dawes isn't a judge who lets truth get in the way.
Unfortunately, that's true.
There's one of Poindexter's deputies now.
Smalley nodded toward the front door. The deputy that Smalley pointed out was Stan Sharp.
All right, ladies, it's that time again.
It hasn't been a month, Sharp.
The man who spoke was the owner of the Hog Heaven.
It ain't my call, Beeson. This is the doing of the sheriff, the judge, and the prosecutor. Let's go, ladies.
There were four bar girls working the floor.
How much is it gonna cost us this time?
$10, same as before?
How the hell do I know? I don't make up the fines. I just bring you in when it's time.
You have to give us time to get our money.
All right, get your money. Anyone upstairs?
Yeah, Susie is. She's upstairs with a gentleman friend.
Well, roust her out. You ladies report to the courthouse. I'm going to round up the others.
The deputy went back outside as the four girls hurried up the stairs. A man named Travers came to sit at their table.
What do you think this is all about?
You mean you don't know? How long have you been here? It's been at least a month, hasn't it?
Well, it will be 3 weeks Monday since I bought the feed and seed store.
Oh, well, I guess in that case you've never been here for the roundup.
Well, the roundup? No, I don't reckon I have. I don't even know what you mean by the roundup.
Then I shall explain it to you, my boy. You see, once a month, every whore in town is rounded up, and the sheriff hauls them into court. The judge finds them guilty of prostitution and sentences them to 30 days in jail or a $10 fine. They, of course, the whores, I mean, choose to pay the fine. Then, as soon as they pay their fine, they are free to leave. Free to return to their perfidious profession. Prostituting, purveying pornographic pictures, pimping, providing parsimonious pleasure. Pitiful policy permitted only because of the lack of any sort of justice in our county.
13 P's! That's a new record in alliteration for you, isn't it?
Huh. I do believe it is.
Well, I don't get it. If the judge and sheriff don't want whoring, why don't they just stop it?
Think about it, Travers. There are 25 whores in Sorrento. Each one of them pays a $10 fine every month.
$250.
That's right. That's the money that pays the deputies. There's 5 deputies, and they make $50 apiece. Do you really think they're ready to walk away from that money?
No, I guess not.
That's why they're fined, then turned loose. Dawes, Poindexter, and Gillespie aren't going to shut them down. Arrests and fines for the petty crimes provide a most lucrative income for our devious officers of the court.
But the real money is in taxes.
Yeah, I was told when I bought the feed store that there was a business tax that I would have to pay. I think Mr. Matthew said it was $50, but I don't figure $50 a year is too much.
A month.
What?
Your tax will be $50 a month.
A month? I'm not sure I can handle that. I haven't been here long enough yet to know what kind of business I'm going to have. I mean, it's been pretty good so far, but $50 a month.
Don't think you're alone.
After the saloon, Denham decided to go to the courthouse to report on the ever-corrupt dealings of Judge Dawes.
Next case.
Your Honor, now comes A.J. Odell. Odell is charged with stealing a horse.
A.J. Odell held up his hand.
That's me, Your Honor. I'm A.J. Odell.
I'm told you turned yourself in.
Well, yeah, I did. I figured this was the best way to get attention to my problem.
How do you plead, Odell?
Well, can't we talk about the problem I'm having with Clyde Doomy first?
How do you plead, Mr. Odell?
Well, I did take a horse from Clyde Doomy, but you can't really say I stole it, because that horse ain't worth no more than $150, and a son of a bitch owes me $500 for a seed bull and 6 cows that he brought and never paid for.
Then you confess to stealing Mr. Doomy's horse?
Told you, Judge, I didn't steal it, I took it.
That is the same thing as stealing.
All right, maybe it is. I stole this horse, but like I told you, he owes me $500. Besides which, soon as I got his attention, I give him his horse back. So you can't really say I stole it. Now, Judge, since we're talking about this, what I'd like you to do is order Doomy to give me the money he owes me.
Mr. Odell, you have confessed to stealing Mr. Doomy's horse. That makes you a horse thief. A horse is a man's most personal possession, and by committing the crime of separating a man from his horse, you must pay the maximum penalty prescribed by law. But before I proceed, I want it well understood by everyone in this court that you are pleading guilty to horse thievery.
Yeah, Your Honor, I done told you I plead guilty to taking his horse. But it's like I said, I did it to get his attention. If you look on your record book, Judge, you'll see that I filed me a complaint against Doomy for not paying me for that seed bull and the 6 heifers. That's 2 months ago now it was. You ain't done nothing about it yet, because you said your docket or something like that is full. And like I also said, I've done give him his horse back. He's got his horse, but I still ain't got my money. So what I'm hoping, now that this has all come to your attention, is that you'll make Doomy give me the money he owes me.
I'm afraid, Mr. Odell, that you will no longer have need for the money.
I won't have no need for the money. What are you talking about? Of course I got that need for the money. I got bills to pay just like everyone else.
You will have no need for the money, Mr. Odell, because I'm going to make an example of you. It is a sentence of this court that you are to be taken to the public gallows, and there you will hang by the neck until you are dead.
What? What are you talking about? You're hanging me? Look here, Judge, you can't do that. That's no more than murder.
Execution will be carried out at 10 o'clock tomorrow morning. Return the prisoner to his cell.
Wait, please. No, don't do this. I told you I just borrowed his horse to make a point. Judge, I didn't steal it. I told you he's got his horse back. I'm sorry. Please,
Guilty, sir.
Harold Denham duly reported the hanging, but he liked to consider himself a crusading newspaper man, so in addition to reporting the news, Harold Denham felt compelled to write an editorial as well.
A.J. Odell hanged. Was this hanging necessary? In what has become all too common an occurrence, Mr. A.J. Odell, a rancher, became the sixth person to be hanged in Sorrento this year. Mr. Odell's crime, if it indeed could be called a crime, was to take possession of a horse from his neighbor, Clyde Doomy, as a means of reminding Doomy that he owed Odell $500 for an unpaid debt over the sale of a seed bull and six breeding heifers. Ironically, the horse that Mr. Odell borrowed was valued at no more than $100, a sum much less than the amount owed by Doomy. Judge Dawes, in a trial that had neither jury nor defense attorney, it is the contention of the judge, prosecutor, and sheriff that Odell waived those rights, found Mr. Odell guilty of horse stealing. The sentence affixed was death by hanging, and that sentence was carried out, as described in another article in this newspaper. The question must be asked, why did Mr. Odell waive his right to a trial by jury and to legal representation? In the opinion of this editor, it is because Mr. Odell was never informed of the seriousness of the charge against him. Indeed, when confronted by the court as to whether he took the horse, he readily admitted to same, then attempted to use that opportunity to appeal to the court to see to it that the fair debt owed him was paid. Judge Dawes dismissed without comment Mr. Odell's petition for redress of his grievance. Instead, he sentenced Odell to death by hanging. Because this case seemed puzzling, the editor of this journal has done some investigation. It is now known that Mr. Doomy, against whom Mr. Odell had a claim, is Judge Dawes's brother-in-law. As Mr. Odell has no immediate next of kin, his claim against Doomy for monies owed has now been dropped. As citizens of Texas, we are but 5 years free from the oppressive policies of Reconstruction. But while freedom has reached our fellow Texans, we in Sorrento have a yoke upon our necks that is as heavy and tyrannical as anything forced upon us by Reconstruction, or by the Mexicans before we fought for and achieved our independence. The merchants of our town are struggling with a draconian tax burden. The citizens of our town live in fear of the most extreme retaliation for the slightest provocation. No one dare speak their feelings in public because freedom of speech has been denied them. Who is responsible for these chains of repression under which our town struggles to find but one breath of free air? The guilty parties are none other than our elected leaders. Notice, dear reader, that I put the word elected in quotation marks. I did that to make a point. The point being that while there have been free and unrestricted elections in Texas since the end of Reconstruction, no such freedom has reached Sorrento. Judge Dawes and Sheriff Poindexter, who hold their offices by the ballot, have ensured that they will continue to occupy these offices by intimidating voters. The sheriff's deputies watch every polling place, making certain that only those whom they know will vote the way the judge and sheriff want have free and unfettered access.
I see you are still the crusading journalist.
Doc Gunter and Eb Smalley and the man named Travers were having dinner with Harold Denham the evening after the newspaper came out.
Are you talking about the story on the hanging or the editorial comment?
Both. You're taking a chance, you know.
Not that big a chance. Believe me, I'm not that brave. But I figured that if the editorial appeared in the newspaper, enough people would read it that the publicity itself would provide me with some protection.
How do you figure that?
No, he's right. If a lot of people read this, then something suddenly happens to Harold, it would raise a lot of suspicions. Especially since Harold was very specific about naming names.
Well, you two were at the hanging, weren't you?
I had to be. I had to pronounce him dead.
And I felt that I needed to be there as a newspaperman.
I didn't go. I didn't want to. I've seen them before.
Yes, and you can always catch the next one. It isn't as if it's a rare event in this town, is it?
Did James Earl Van Arsdale argue Odell's case before the jury?
There was no jury trial. I was there.
Yeah, well, the judge, sheriff, and all the deputies are making the claim that before they took Odell from the jail down to the courthouse, he said he didn't want a jury trial. I believe he thought that the most that would happen would be a fine. And I think he thought that he could enlist the court's assistance in getting back the money Doomie owed him. He didn't realize that Doomie is one of Judge Dawes' biggest supporters.
Yeah, it probably wouldn't have made that much difference if there had been a jury trial. Judge Dawes handpicks his juries, and they all do exactly what he tells them to do. Besides which, I doubt seriously that James Earl Van Arsdale has drawn a sober breath in 3 years.
Well, Van Arsdale's a good man, though. Drunk or sober, he's a better man than Gillespie, Poindexter, or Dawes.
You got that right.
Odell wasn't exactly what you call a sterling citizen. I know damn well he's stolen from me a couple of times. And there's some that swear he's the one that held up the stage from Commerce City a couple of years ago. But it doesn't seem to me like he deserved to hang. Especially since he didn't really steal the horse. He just took it to hold until he got the money that was owed to him.
I think at least three of the previous five who were hanged would not have been hanged in any other court. And even the two who probably did deserve to hang didn't exactly get what you would call a fair trial.
Across the street from the newspaper office, upstairs over the hardware store, James Earl Van Arsdale had his office and living quarters. At one time, he had a house on the north end in the more affluent part of town. But 3 years ago, a fire had destroyed his house and taken the lives of his wife and infant son. The house lay in burned cinders for more than a year afterward, until Van Arsdale finally succumbed to the neighbors' pressure to get it cleaned up. He still owned the lot on which the house had stood, but he had no plans of rebuilding. Instead, he moved a cot into his law office, and that's where he lived. Van Arsdale started drinking soon after that, and his law practice, which was once very profitable because he had been a good lawyer, was now barely making enough to sustain him. Tonight, Van Arsdale was sitting in the dark, drinking as usual, and looking through the window, when he saw two of the sheriff's deputies stop in front of the newspaper office. They stood there for a moment, looking up and down the street. Then, when they determined that they weren't being watched, they threw a brick through the front window of the newspaper office. Back in the saloon, Denham, unaware of the attack on his office, was involved in a discussion about Dawes and Poindexter with the others at the table.
Somebody should do something.
Yeah, we want to do something, but the question is what? What can we do?
I don't know. Maybe Harold's editorial will wake some people up. It isn't just the fact that Dawes is on a hanging spree, it's everything he does. The way they find the whores once a month. The way they collect taxes on every business in town. And not just retail business, mind you. I'm having to pay $35 a month just to practice medicine.
Yeah, $50 a month for me to keep my mercantile store open.
I haven't been here for a month yet, but apparently it will be costing me that much to run the feed and seed.
Don't think I'm exempt. I'm paying $35 a month to publish my newspaper.
Harold, you know what you should do? You should send a copy of your newspaper to the governor.
Yeah. If the governor read your article, he'd maybe do something about it.
The governor is an elected official, just like the judge and the sheriff. He's not going to take a hand in dealing with other elected officials.
How about the Texas Rangers? If we could get a Texas Ranger here, could be he could straighten a few things out for us.
Good idea. I know a ranger. I'll send him a telegram.
Better not send it from here.
Well, don't worry, I won't.
Hey, Denham! You better come quick! Someone just threw a brick through your front window!
Denham got up quickly, as did Doc Gunter, Smalley, and Travers. The four men hurried down to his newspaper office. There was a big gaping hole in the front window. Denham unlocked the door. He bowed his head and pinched the bridge of his nose.
I'm sorry, Harold.
Denham looked back toward his composing room, the press, the tables, his trays, and the type drawers. Except for the shattered glass, nothing else seemed to be disturbed.
Well, it could have been worse.
Have you got a broom? I'll help you get this mess cleaned up.
No. Leave it be.
What do you mean, leave it be? You gotta get it cleaned up.
No, I don't. I don't want it cleaned up. Evidently, someone did not like what I wrote. I intend to leave it just like it is, as a badge of honor.
Harold, you be careful. I mean it. I don't put anything past Dawes or Poindexter.
If he thinks throwing a brick through a window is going to keep me quiet, he has another thing coming. Preserve the freedom of the human mind and freedom of the press. Every spirit should be ready to devote itself to martyrdom. For as long as we may think as we will and speak as we think, the condition of man will proceed in improvement.
Those are some words.
They are indeed, sir. But I cannot take credit for them. Those words, sir, were uttered by Thomas Jefferson.
Van Arsdale took another swallow of his whiskey and sat in the dark loneliness of his room, looking down onto the street. He saw Harold Denham, the newspaper owner, come, along with Doc Gunter, Mr. Smalley, and the new man who had bought the feed and seed store from Donald Lewis.
Ah, noble sheriff!
He held the bottle out toward the window as if in salute.
Our noble sheriff did it!
James Earl Van Arsdale, son of Congressman Van Arsdale of the 1st Congressional District of Virginia, graduated from William & Mary with honors. He had a bright future ahead of him, a future planned by his father. But James Earl didn't want to run for Congress. He wanted to marry Martha Jane Malcolm. Martha Jane was a beautiful girl, but she had a flaw in her past that the senior Van Arsdale could not overlook. Indeed, the flaw in Martha Jane's past was such that not even the state of Virginia could sanction the marriage. Martha Jane's beautiful dark eyes and golden skin were the result of her grandmother. Martha Jane's grandmother was a black woman. Determined to marry the woman he loved, James Earl Van Arsdale left Virginia and moved to Texas. Of course, Texas also had a law against miscegenation. But here, who was to know? The marriage had been happy, and Van Arsdale's law career had been very productive until the night of the fire. Van Arsdale had been in Austin when the fire broke out. He knew nothing about it until he returned home to find his house in ruins and his wife and child dead. The cause of the fire was never determined, but it didn't matter. Van Arsdale blamed himself, not for causing the fire, but for not being there when it happened. He was sure he would have been able to save them. And if he couldn't have saved Martha Jane and James Earl Jr., then better he would have died with them. He got drunk that very day, and he'd been drunk ever since. Now, as he sat here in the darkness, looking down on the newspaper office, he felt a begrudging respect for Harold Denham. Denham was a decent man, and a man of courage. Denham, almost single-handedly, was fighting the corrupt policies of Judge Dawes, Sheriff Poindexter, and prosecuting attorney Gillespie. Van Arsdale knew what they were doing, and he knew that if he had courage as much as Denham, he could write a brief and submit it to the state Supreme Court. But there was the rub. Van Arsdale's courage was in the bottle, and right now, that bottle was empty. Van Arsdale went to his cabinet for a new bottle.
And now comes the peace that passeth all understanding. Oh.
Lucy Smith lay in bed, staring up at the ceiling. Sheriff Poindexter was lying in bed beside her. Lucy had chosen this profession because she thought it would be an easy way to make a lot of money. But there was nothing easy about it. It did have its moments, such as when she helped some young man through his first experience. But more often than not, she found herself dealing with men who were angry with their alcohol-induced impotence, men who sometimes struck out at her in their anger. Poindexter had never hit her, but because he frightened her, it took all she had just to be able to force herself to be with him. Lucy got up from the bed and walked over to the chest of drawers, where she poured water into the large porcelain basin. In the mirror above the chest, she saw Sheriff Poindexter staring at her, so she picked up the basin and went behind the dressing screen.
Hey, why'd you go behind that screen?
I don't like performing my ablutions before an audience.
Say what?
It means I need a little privacy.
You're a whore. There's nothing that a whore does that's private. Come on now. Whatever it is you're doing, now you do it out here so I can watch. I said, come out from behind that screen!
Sheriff Poindexter walked over to the folding screen, picked it up, and threw it.
Oh, what the hell are you ducking for? I ain't gonna hit you. Not as long as you do what I say. Now, all I'm gonna do is watch, see? Now, go on with whatever you were doing.
Lucy dipped the cloth in the water and continued to clean herself.
Lucy, is everything all right in there?
It's the Sheriff Poindexter. I've got everything under control.
Lucy?
I told you I got everything under control, Beeson! Now, you just go on about your business and you leave me to mine.
I want to hear her voice.
Sheriff Poindexter pulled on his pants, strapped on his pistol belt, and then walked over to jerk open the door. Beeson, who was not only the bartender but the owner of the Hog Heaven Saloon, was standing on the other side.
Sheriff, what's going on here? Why did I hear Lucy cry out?
You know, Beeson, you're just the man I'm wanting to see. I've discovered that you're running a whorehouse here. A whorehouse, mind you, in clear violation of the law. You're under arrest.
Under arrest? What do you mean? You're the one that came up here to Lucy's room!
Oh, now that was just part of my investigating. I suspected you were running a whorehouse, and now I know for sure that you are. So you can pay me the fine now, $5 for each one of your whores, or you can come down to the courthouse and pay $10 for each one of your whores. Which is it gonna be?
First, I want to see that Lucy is all right.
Poindexter pulled his pistol and pointed it at Beeson's head.
I told you, you are under arrest. I could shoot you for resisting arrest.
No! Don't, please! Mr. Beeson, it's all right. I'm fine.
I heard you call out.
It's all right, really. I knocked over the dressing screen by accident, that's all.
All right. If you're sure, I'll just go back down to the bar.
No, not yet.
What do you mean, not yet?
Well, there's a little matter of the $25 you owe me. $5 for each whore you have working here.
You aren't serious about that, are you? You know that I pay a fine once a month so I can do business, just as all the girls do.
Yeah, well, see, now, this is a special fine. Now, what's it gonna be? The fine, or I take you to jail? Or do I shoot you for resisting arrest?
I'll have to get the money from downstairs.
Oh, well, you do that.
Lucy started to get dressed.
What are you doing?
I'm getting dressed.
What for?
Because I'm finished with my toilet.
You are? You mean that was all there was to it?
Yeah.
Well, hell, girl, what were you so private about? You didn't do nothing but splash a little water on yourself.
Sheriff, would you like me to bathe you?
No. Why the hell would I want you to do that? I took me a bath not more than a couple of weeks ago.
Some man seemed to like it.
Yeah, well, it seems to me that only a girly man would do something like that. No, thank you. I'll be doing my own washing.
Ranger Corey Davidson had been with the Texas Rangers since before the war, returning to serve with the Rangers once they were reconstituted after Reconstruction. He was one of the rangers around whom myths had developed. Once, he bested four armed men, killing three of them and taking the fourth prisoner. After being out on assignment, Davidson returned to Austin, where he had a telegram waiting for him. The telegram was from Eb Smalley, a man who had served in his regiment during the war. The telegram asked him to please come to Sorrento to look into conditions there. Because Davidson considered the telegram to be a personal rather than an official request, he didn't notify his superiors of his intention. That way, his visit would be in a non-official capacity. When Davidson reached Sorrento, he went directly to Smalley's store.
Colonel Davidson, sir, how good it is to see you.
Hello, Major Smalley. I got your telegram. Would you like to tell me what's going on in this town?
I'll tell you what's going on in this town. Judge Dawes, Prosecutor Gillespie, Sheriff Poindexter, and his deputies have turned this town into hell. The judge is using the hangman's rope as a means of legal murder, and they're bleeding the town dry with illegal taxes and fines.
Have you got any proof of this? I mean, I believe you, but when you're dealing with officials like a judge, sheriff, and prosecuting attorney, you're going to have to come up with some sort of backup.
Come with me to see Harold Denham. He's a newspaper editor, and he's been keeping a really close record.
On their way to the newspaper, Smalley stopped by Doc Gunter's office, inviting him to join him. A half hour later, Ranger Davidson had examined all the material Denham had collected.
I have to admit that this is pretty damning. And you say Odell didn't get a trial by jury?
The judge, prosecutor, and sheriff all claimed that he said he didn't want one. But, Ranger Davidson, I was in the court when they brought him in. He had no idea that the trial could end in such a way. In fact, I believe he welcomed the trial because he thought he'd be able to get support from the court on recovering the money that was owed him.
This article suggests that Judge Dawes is a brother-in-law to the man who owed Odell money.
I'm doing more than suggesting it. I'm coming right out and saying it.
Do you have any proof of that?
Let me show you something.
Denham opened a drawer from one of the cabinets in his composing room, then took out two pieces of stiff card material that were tied with a strip of cloth. Undoing the cloth, he removed the top card, disclosing a photograph of a document.
What is this?
This, Ranger Davidson, is proof that Doomy is Judge Dawes' brother-in-law. It is a photograph of the wedding license. You see here that the woman's maiden name was Lila Dawes, and you see here that the judge was not only the issuing authority, but is also listed as brother to the female applicant.
Judge Dawes should have recused himself from the Odell case.
Yes, that's what I think as well.
You did well to send for me, Eb.
So, what are you going to do? How are you going to handle it?
The judge can only be removed by a state Supreme Court Ethics Committee or by impeachment.
What about the sheriff? I've shown you a list of his violations as well.
Ah, now that I can do something about. I can arrest him. That will do two things. It will take away Judge Dawes' army, so to speak, and in the ensuing trial, we will be able to turn up enough evidence to use against the judge in impeachment.
You're going to arrest the sheriff?
Yes.
I don't know if you ought to do that.
What do you mean? I thought that's what you wanted.
Yes, I do want it. But the sheriff has at least two deputies around him all the time. I don't know if it would be all that good of an idea for you to go up against him all by yourself. Shouldn't you get some help?
I'm all the help I'll need. I take it he'll be in the sheriff's office?
Well, you'll find him in one of the saloons. More than likely, it will be the Long Trail Saloon. That's the one he frequents the most.
Are you saying the sheriff spends all his time in a saloon?
Yes, and why not? He drinks free, he eats free, and any time he wants one of the girls, why, she's free as well.
That's using his badge for personal gain. That's all I need to arrest him.
Ranger Davidson pushed through the batwing doors of the saloon, then stepped to one side so that a wall was at his back. At the bar, with a glass of beer in front of him, stood a big man with a deformed eye. Davidson would have recognized him from his description, even if he hadn't been wearing a sheriff's badge.
Well, if it ain't a Texas Ranger, welcome to my town, Ranger. Step up over to the bar, have a drink, huh? Bartender don't charge nothing for lawmen. Now do you, bartender?
Ranger Davidson made no movement toward the bar.
Well, maybe you ain't a drinking man. That's all right, that's all right. Look around at the girls and see which one you find pleasing and take her. The girls, they don't charge lawmen nothing either.
Davidson remained in place.
Well, if you don't want a drink and you don't want a whore, what are you doing in here? What do you want?
I'm putting you under arrest.
What? Now you're funning with me, ain't you, Ranger?
This is no joke, Poindexter. You are under arrest for malfeasance in office.
What? Now what is that?
It's enough to get you 20 years. Like I said, Poindexter, you're under arrest. Take off your badge and drop your gun belt.
You got that a little backwards, ain't you, Ranger? I'm the sheriff here. You're in my town and in my county. And I am putting you under arrest for threatening an officer of the law. Now drop your gun belt.
Poindexter, my authority comes from the state of Texas. Are you saying that county authority supersedes state authority?
Look over here, Ranger.
When Davidson looked over, he saw Deputy Sharp was standing near the piano, holding a double-barreled shotgun pointing directly at him.
If you so much as touch your gun, I'll blow your head off.
Poindexter drew his pistol and pointed it at Davidson.
Well now, Mr. Texas Ranger, you seem to have gotten yourself into quite a little bind here. There are two guns pointed at you.
That doesn't change anything. You are still under arrest.
Draw, Ranger.
Both Poindexter and Sharp fired at the same time.
Bartender, I'll be having another drink now.